morning, you two.
Hello, hello, hello.
Okay. Bubby, 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 bubby.
Hello.
Do we see anything?
Hello, hello, hello.
Okay. Now let's just hear Bobby.
Bobby. Bobby's rather soft spoken.
Mm-hmm.
So
be close to the microphone.
Oh, you mean like this?
We just turned you
exactly.
Oh man, we are so tech savvy. He's the engineer. What are we doing with all this stuff?
What the hell, man?
So come here. Let me teach you something. See this little knob right here?
We did a whole show with a woman who was calling in from the Bahamas. And I never really knew she wasn't even being recorded. We had to redo the whole show again. Luckily, she was very gracious about it.
I once recorded, Ray Benson came and we recorded Emmylou Harris and a bunch of stuff. And the next day, it was in the day of 24 track, and the next day I erased her vocal.
All right, I don't feel so bad.
Yeah, do you know Larry Chaney?
Sure.
He was doing a thing with Cyril Neville. This was years ago when Larry used to live up the road and he had a studio in his house and Cyril was there and I guess it was his grandson. And he was still just crawling. They had been recording and I think they pretty much had the whole thing done and he went and unplugged something and everything just went.
You have a Neve mic pre.
Well, yes.
Well, what else would we have?
Oh my God, this is high class. Had I known that, I would have been on time.
And two Billy Gibbons mics. Neve, Billy Gibbons mics.
We got contacts.
Yeah, we
Gee
do.
Whiz.
We do. So you better be good. Well, better be good.
I told you I'd show up, and I barely did that.
Why aren't we recording all this?
We are. All the name of pre-testing it. So I think with that, maybe we'll get started. And
let's,
if you're
yeah,
willing
let's just
to
go
just,
into it.
We'll just fly into it. So I don't even remember my opening lines. Hello, everybody. And welcome to another episode of Passports, Please. Conversations about the power of place. The places that change us and why it matters. I am your co-host, Dr. Chick Morgan, the Cowgirl PhD Diva, along with my co-host here,
Rodney Bersiel,
the photographer in chief, and doing some exercises and basically making his presence known is our fabulous guest today. We're very excited about Mr. Bobby Arnold, and you're going to learn a lot about Bobby.
Yeah, we've actually got him in the studio.
In the studio, which is going to be the biggest challenge of this whole hour, Bobby, I think.
Hey, I never knew how to say Bersiel. I'm so glad. That's perfect.
I don't either.
I've already learned something. This is great.
Well, that's the thing I love about you, Bobby. You're very clear when you learn something.
And that's not often.
Although, I have to admit, I've known Bobby only, 3 years maybe now, maybe four, and through our association with Blue Rock Artist Ranch Recording Studio. And we used to laugh because every single time we were working together at events and fests and things like that, we'd look at each other and we'd say,
"Ass chick."
Oh, I wasn't thinking about that, but that's good. That was the advice Bobby gave everybody who walked in the door.
Oh, what did we say?
Well, that we always learn something absolutely new about each other.
Oh, yes, that's true.
Yeah, that's true. And I think today's...
And you're about to run out with me.
Okay, thanks for listening, folks.
Yeah, we're going to knock it all out in 45 minutes.
This may be the end of Chick and my friendship right here.
No, it might be the end of our podcast. But... All righty. Such
Chick.
A serious show.
Can we change the name of the podcast?
We'll just call it Ask Chick. How's that?
Bersiel.
Bersiel. Bersiel.
Bersiel.
Well, it's, you know, my dad went to the doctor a while back, and he was talking to him. He said, "Yeah," he said, "you know, you ought to change your name to Har." My dad's going, "Why would I change my name to Har?" He goes, "Har Bersiel."
All right, that took me a moment, but I'm not always the quick on the uptake with jokes. We do better when we have call-ins from Kenya and Hawaii, don't we, Rodney? We should learn from this lesson.
Mistake
all right,
number
Bobby,
one.
Bobby, you're here for a reason. You are here for a reason because we actually thought you would be an interesting guest.
and he's proving that true.
Yes, he is, but for not the reasons that we wanted. There are so many ways to get into a conversation. That was not the one we expected.
You're not,
but it works.
You're not the first woman I'm going to disappoint. So.
I don't know if this is going to be visible, but we're going to keep it.
Oh, it's all going in.
It's all going in. Well, we could pretend to talk about the reasons that we thought you were an interesting person to talk to. And let's start with the fact that you somehow found your way to Austin, Texas in a very interesting time. Can you tell us a little bit about the time before that and how you actually ended up here and why?
Well, I was in Georgia. I grew up in Georgia, wanted to be in the music business. And this is in late 70s and stuff. And I didn't know anybody who'd ever been in the music business. You know, in my world, in Dublin, Georgia, it's just...
No. Why did you want to be in the music business if you didn't know anybody?
You really know why? So I wouldn't have to wear a suit and tie and could keep my hair long and wear jeans and be comfortable like that. Plus, I like music. And
By the way,
how am I doing?
Just described yourself.
And so I saw, it used to be a country music magazine. It had a picture of Joe Ely and Alvin Crow on the front, back in Georgia. Mm-hmm. I saw that. And then I saw Willie on Austin City Limits. Mm. So I said, I'll go to Austin. Knew no one here. Mm. And within nine...
And were you doing any, were you playing... Did you have a band?
No, I was a drummer, and I've been in garage bands like everybody, you know, because I did grow up in the best era of music in 200 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so everyone
here,
played.
Here.
Yeah.
Everyone played. So I thought, I could go be a musician or something. But when I got here and, you know, heard the musicians, I thought, I wonder what else I can do. Yeah.
That's why I just take pictures of them.
But within 9 months, I was working for Willie. You know, it's just,
Wait a minute. There needs to be a broader segue to that.
Yeah, I moved to Austin and I just started working for Willie Nelson.
That's pretty much what happened, you know.
Well, is there any more to the story than that, Bobby?
Okay. Yeah. Well, sure. Once I realized I wasn't a musician after all, certainly not a drummer, all I did was go to this old, what's that thing called? Oh, yeah, a phone book. With the yellow pages, entertainment. And I started
seriously.
There, and I just went from place call to call, place to place. I don't want money. I just need in. And I have no idea. It just sort of happened. Oh, yes, I do. Somehow I met this guy with a Cooter Brown. Do you remember that? You were too young to remember that band in this department. Oh, my God, they were fantastic. And he took me in. And then they signed to Willie's new Lone Star label, record label. And somehow that got me into the Willie crowd. And then that record label folded.
Well, what did you do when you went to work there if you didn't know much about music?
Oh, I had wrote columns in a newspaper. I did all this stuff I had no idea how to do. But, you know, it's just the opportunity. And at that time, I was too naive to realize I didn't know how to do these things.
So who did you get to meet during that time? That was a really rich era, as you mentioned.
Well,
if you're hanging out with Willie, it's probably who didn't you meet.
Are we pre-Willie or in that little few months before Willie or after Willie? You know, that's your question. It wasn't as interesting pre-Willie, I can tell you that much.
Let's not even talk about pre-Willie. And I thought you said free Willie, and I was really confused then. But
that's next week's episode.
That's right.
That's true. That's our Whales and Sharks episode.
Rodney and I are going to watch that movie together tonight so we can review it next week.
By the way, he
all
gets
right, so free. After Willie, after you met Willie, what did you do? I'm really serious about
it. I was, first of all, a flunky. I have a degree in economics. As you well know, because we learned that about each other.
We did.
And then we learned about your book. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's surprising. I have a degree for sure. And so, you know, I was just trying to get in, and I was kind of like a gopher. And then I wound up getting to be a tertiary music market record promoter. Mm. So I'd call people and say, play this record. But that ended in 9 months. That whole thing fell apart. So then.
That wasn't payola, was it? Never mind. I withdraw the question. Okay.
I'll put it this way. I never received payola.
Duly noted.
Okay. And then I wound up somehow, he bought Briarcliff out there near Spicewood in that subdivision with a golf course and a pool. And I wound up being the security guard out there.
That's a frightening, frightening thought.
Yeah. Oh, really, it is. I mean, it was crazier than you imagine.
Did you carry a gun and do all that?
No, heck no, but I had guns pointed at me for sure. And then one day that ended, and Willie had his studio by then, so I moved up to become the janitor.
A good career move.
It was definitely move up. And somehow, Willie had his crew, and the whole crew, of course, they had other roots in other places of the country. And they all left one day, and that left me and a technician. And Willie said, do you guys want to record my record? I mean, everybody was gone, and he was ready to record. And we said, okay. But we didn't have extensive recording. You know, we dabbled much, but we didn't have extensive recording experience.
So the janitor recorded his record.
And a technician.
Mm-hmm. You know. but makes sense to the music world, right?
It was a different world then, you know, yeah. Studio-wise. And the technician was really good with the equipment, and I understood music. And between us, we made one good engineer. That's the way we looked at it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Plus, I would clean up. You know, and I worked, so that lasted for another 8 or 9 years.
Really?
And I kept cleaning up for 8 or 9 years, you know.
Wow.
It just came with my position in there. So I guess it kind of worked out,
Sounds like it could have, and I bet you met some interesting people then, too. Huh?
Well, everybody, and you just named the industry, showed up.
Hmm.
Politicians, sports, actors. I remember one time, we all lived in these condos out there, and this guy pulled up and said, hey, you want to golf? I said, sure. And I golfed, and we golfed, and we golfed for several days. How long did you take? 3 weeks. I got to be here 3 weeks. And it was Dennis Hopper.
Oh,
so
wow.
We golfed forever. You know?
Wow.
So that's pretty much what it was like.
Yeah.
You know, you never knew who was going to show up, how long they were going to stay. What everybody wanted to sing with Willie, so it's musician after musician.
They just wanted to hang out.
Yes, you know, so it was pretty interesting. Earl Campbell, all those Houston Oilers, I believe they were.
Yeah.
Mm.
I can't imagine what that would be like. Why did you leave?
I was invited out the door.
Well, what do you do for a follow-up act after something like that? Did you stay in the music business?
You know, that's a great question, Chick. How do you go from being Bobby Arnold, Willie Nelson's sound guy, to being Bobby Arnold? You know, that's a tough, tough phase. So to answer your question, a lot of drinking and crying and things like that. But eventually, another opportunity came up at the university, Texas State University. And I got selected to help start and develop and run a recording program there and a recording studio, which has been going on for 25 years.
Yeah, a pretty famous studio and program. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I don't know. I just kind of always got lucky and got the job. I wasn't always the best or the most qualified.
In
Willie's case, even qualified.
You're blowing the brains of all the career coaches that might be listening to this. Yeah. And say, let's make a 5-year plan for you.
Well, 5-year plans are good for somebody, just not necessary for me.
How did you teach this at the university?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a great question.
You know, if you didn't have to do it.
Well, I explained to them that I was from a different era, and that what I did wasn't as possible today. How I turned that around was, but if I can do it, you can do it. You know. So we talked as much about life and getting jobs and stuff that we did technology. And still to this day, I hear from 50 or 60 students every year.
Yeah, so I was a student there when you were teaching. Now I'm wishing I had signed up for your class.
Oh my God, I'm old.
We both are, Bobby.
Ask Chick.
Yeah. I know the answer to that one.
Actually, I take that. When did you start there?
91 or two.
I had 1 year left there. You came in, you were the beginning when I was ending there.
Well, that's just
that could have been my final credit.
Oh man. But Bobby, you've also played. And I read somewhere that the first thing I ever read about you playing, besides playing bass in the Dublin, Georgia garage, whatever, high school band, whatever that was, all of a sudden you're fast forwarding and you're on stage somewhere in France with a bunch of really high-powered people. So again, you know, what's interesting about you is the segues are missing.
Yeah. And there are a lot of them.
Just saying. Yeah. So how did you end up on a stage in France, on a jumbotron, no less, as I understand how the story goes?
You're looking at me. Can't you understand why they want me on a jumbotron?
Yes, darling.
Well, okay, so Texas State, that studio called the Fire Station Studios, mm-hmm. was built by a dude named Lucky Tomlin.
Oh, yeah.
Okay?
He's a legend.
And Lucky would come around the studio, and I did several recordings with him after he sold it to the university. And we became friends. Mm-hmm. So then one day, he said, hey, man, I have a band. You know, Lucky was a amateur musician, great songwriter, the father, grandfather of rap. Nobody knows that, but he was doing rap in the early 80s, in the late 70s, and just a hell of a guy. And we had become friends, and he said, hey, man, I want to start a band, and we'll rehearse at my house, and you bring, I have a little recording, a PA, and you run the PA. I said, oh, fantastic. Excuse me. And so I did that, and after the first rehearsal, and there's some bad musicians, but... I mean, as in good.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I don't know the difference, so thanks for clarifying.
It was a big band.
It was a great band.
Like nine people in the band or something?
This is prior to that.
Oh, okay.
And it just wasn't my thing. You know, I wasn't comfortable. It's not what I wanted to invest my time in. And so I called Lucky and said, thank you, but I'm not interested. And like within an hour, he called back and said, well, man, I think I'll take another path. And I've called some other people, and you can come back. I said, okay. So it just kind of started over. And like the second day, and this is when Red Volkert and Earl Poolball, at that time, Cindy Cashdollar.
Oh, yeah.
And John Hahn on drums and Sarah Brown on bass. Oh, wow. And, you know, and Johnny X. Reed. I mean, and me. Which of these doesn't belong, you know? But the deal, but sometimes I hadn't played guitar in like 10 years. And Lucky said, don't you strum guitar? I said, no. Nah. So he said, well, here, plug yourself in. So I started strumming with this band. And the next thing I know, we're playing on live radio. Well, that was our first gig at KUT.
Really?
Oh, no, it was at Hills Cafe, mm-hmm. you know, live broadcasting. Mm-hmm. We just suddenly. I'm a musician, finally. But, you know, that was pretty phenomenal. And it just kept going. I mean, that lasted for 12 years.
Wow.
And we went everywhere. Mm. And one of those places was Crepone, France. Now, right before Crepone, France, which is a 2,000-year-old city, is beautiful, and it's a festival, and we put it, look, we get into Crepone, France. I'm walking down the street. Just got off the bus, and I hear Bobby Arnold and Joel Guzman.
Yeah.
Because we're all here to do this festival.
Yeah,
yeah. You know? Yeah. So it was just kind of great. Mm-hmm. And right before that, we'd been playing and playing, and all I would do is stand back there in the corner and play guitar. And I honestly don't think the sound guy had my guitar in the mix.
And for those of you that are hearing this can only listen to it, you're missing all the air guitar in the studio here that Bobby is doing.
And sadly, it's out of tune and out of rhythm as well.
Keep playing, Bobby.
I do have a guitar here somewhere if you want to. In fact, it's right behind you.
Yeah, that's one way to end this.
We may be there yet. So.
That's right. A harsh beginning and a harsh end, and nothing in the middle.
Okay,
everything
so
is great.
You're on stage. You're playing the guitar.
Oh, so the band said, "Well, Bobby, now you've got to start singing," because what it was Lucky sang, and then Earl sang, and then Red and Sarah, and it just kind of went around whoever was playing. And he said, "You've got to do one." So, like 2 months before Crapone, I started singing on stage. Never done it really in a long time. Not a singer, not a guitar player, but there I am. So we go to Crapone, and they make me do a song, and I get a picture of it. I mean, there's 10,000 people there. You know, and I've sang at the Broken Spoke in Lucky's house. And driving to Lucky's house. and there my face is on this big Megatron behind me. Had I ever seen that, I would have never finished it. You know. By the way, Red Roker and I decided to tell a joke in French, and he delivered the line, and I messed up the return, and it was like crickets. It was so great. We're standing on this big stage with 10,000 people, and not one person either got it or laughed.
It's funny, he tells that same story about you.
There wasn't even a pity laugh.
Oh,
it was just crickets. And Red looking at me like, "You idiot."
So you had quite a time playing around the world and with the best musicians in the world.
Yeah, the only reason I enjoyed singing was, imagine what I got to do. I picked songs based on not what I could do, but what could I turn and ask a musician to play a solo? Mm. Can you imagine having that behind you for 12 years? Turn around and say, how about let's have John X. Reed play a solo, and then Red. And then we'll wait, and then we'll let Earl Poolball do one over here. And then we'll let one of these guys do it every time. The only reason I sang was because I could get the solos in the order I wanted them, and then I could just stand and listen because these are seriously great musicians and fun people.
Yeah.
We did a lot of this laughter, as a matter of fact.
Wow. Great story. So, and that lasted for about 12 years?
Yeah.
Boy.
I know.
So what do you do after that?
Oh, well, when we went to Crapone, France, decided it probably wanted to live in Europe for a while. And after 20, we began going to Europe over the summers just to see where we wanted to be. And like one time we'd take our backpacks and got a Eurail, and we'd go wherever we wanted to go and get off wherever felt good. If we liked it, we stayed, and if we didn't, we'd get back on. And just looking for places. Eventually, one of the places led us to a country called Macedonia, a little city called Ohrid. And here's the thing about Ohrid. Ohrid's on a lake, a little bigger than, say, the Sea of Galilee. Well, there's an odd reference.
We're with you.
Okay, I know exactly. That's
keep
the
going.
Thing. And it's stream-fed and cold, and you can go out 60 yards and see the bottom of your feet underwater. And there's this little cove right there at the lake. And that little cove has been constantly occupied by humans for over 8,000 years. Mm. I mean, that's mind-blowing enough. Mm-hmm. But then up there is a little cathedral that's been around for 2,000 years or 1,500. Over there is the from the Roman Empire. So it's pretty phenomenal just to walk around there. So you got this natural beauty, and you got this historical beauty all around. Frescoes from 2,000 years ago or 1,500 years ago. So it's a pretty stunning place. And we visited there and fell in love with that and moved there and lived there for 4 years.
Mm.
So that was a result directly of going to France with Lucky.
Another very planned career move.
Because here's the deal. I was like 52 or 3, and I'd never been across the Atlantic. Ever.
Speaking of passports.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
So wow. I got one.
Yeah. And you liked it.
And I passported it. You know, we traveled a lot since then. So we spent 4 years in Macedonia. Macedonia just, 2 weeks ago turned 29 in this version. You know, it was Yugoslavia, part of Yugoslavia, which then broke up in 91 or so, 92. So it's a 29-year-old country. I have a friend.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yes, I have a friend from Macedonia who in her high school days came over here. She left Yugoslavia, came to America, did 2 months, came back to her Macedonia. Her country changed in the time that she left and returned.
Uh-huh. Yeah, how weird would that be? Come back, it's like, this is no longer the United States of America. It's
maybe Canada? Could we be that lucky?
Hey, man, it takes its toll on people, I can tell you. Yeah. The generation that was there, they were all, well, it just takes its toll because your life is kind of stripped from you and you have to start over. Some people are very good at starting over and others aren't. Mm-hmm. And so for the ones who weren't, it was a bit of a struggle. Now, they've kind of come through that and they found their way, but those first few years was very challenging for them, you know, and it was just a fantastic place on earth. I still love it. Of course, from there, we do Greece and various places like that, but the coolest thing about it was, cool is not the right word. An interesting thing about it being there was, it was during the Mideast refugee crisis. Mm. So, Macedonia is on that Balkan route from, Turkey and stuff down there through Greece. And, you know, where you see all those, if you can remember in 2015 and 16, all those rubber boats in the water packed with people. Mm-hmm. You know, that's where they cross there. And then they try to get on up into Macedonia. And here was, you remember those pictures in that go through Greece? And pictures in Greece around that time and those hundreds of thousands of people at Greece waiting to move forward,
right.
I don't know if you can recall it. That was a train track away from where we were. So that train track came through Macedonia to a little town, forgotten town. Good Lord. When I say train track, I don't mean anything fancy. It is tough. Called Tobanovci. And so they started transitioning from on the train from Greece, northern Greece, southern Macedonia, up to Tobanovci to Serbia, and then you're going up to Hungary and stuff like that to get to the EU countries. That was the whole thing. Because their countries were in shambles, okay? And a friend of ours, a friend of mine saw in early, I don't know, maybe it was 2015. He was from Thessaloniki, and he came over. He said, man, and he's a great human being, very empathetic, caring man, he and his wife both. He said, I saw some people walking on a train track, and he had business in Damascus and other places. He said, and I think they're from the Middle East. And that was the beginning. He said, and we should do something about it. So he went to Greece, and he worked around those hundreds of thousands. And in the meantime, they were sending thousands of people a day up through this way, at an escalated price of a plane train ticket, by the way. And some friends of ours in Skopje, which is the capital of Macedonia, said, well, they're coming through here. We should do something for them. So they went to Tobanovci and through Red Cross or somebody, maybe the Macedonian government, got the okay to start serving them black tea. They studied and said, oh, this particular black tea is refreshing to them, and they'll come here, they'll get some black tea, and then we'll send them on north. You know, they just walking, however they can get north. They're just trying to find an EU country that would take them in so they could start life over because their lives had been ruined. But I'm talking about those people, those who are refugees. So we volunteered to participate in that. And we'd go up there. Hey, a train is coming. It was 3 hours from Oak Ridge. So we get a hotel. We stay there a while. We get a phone call. A train is coming at 2 in the afternoon or 2 in the morning. There's 750 people on it. Let's greet them. And we would do that. And all these cats would get off this train, men and women, you know, and they are haggard. It's a tough journey they've been on. And everyone's trying to steal from them. It's danger at every corner. And they're just grandmothers who left their homes. So we would stand in, the train would pull up, and they would just pile out. And my job, I'd stand out in the middle of them, and all the men that would come in, you know, all Muslim. So I would be very respectful of women and the separation. I talked to men only. And I would just touch their shoulder smile and for a second make them feel somewhat human. Let them know that there's some dignity and that someone cares about them. And all the young guys, because I'm old, they would kiss me. And then as it got colder, it was really cold. Oh, here's what happened. The borders closed in March of 2016. And suddenly this little transitional town became a community. But there was no preparation whatsoever. There was no buildings, not enough water, no restroom, no housing, nothing. No heat or not enough. And just overnight, there were 1,500 people. And that was a hellacious 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm. 6 weeks.
Transitioning to finally get some sort of help. Mm-hmm. The Red Cross did come in Macedonia, and other agencies did some stuff. But it was tough. And it was also the middle of winter. But I'll tell you another thing about that. I'd come up to do my time there. And finally, when Red Cross started feeding people, for a long time, we did serve tea here for weeks. We served tea, and then a Muslim organization came in over here and volunteers, and they did one meal of rice every day. And that was the meal for everybody. There'd be a line for food, and that was it, man. You got it that day or you were done. You were out of luck. And it was so cold. And I remember I was all wrapped up and my old white beard was hanging out and walking into that north wind and that line. And they kind of couldn't tell the difference sometimes. And several times, young men would come off that line with their food, and they'd see me, and they'd offer me the food because they knew they could go a day without eating, but I couldn't. Mm-hmm. You know, over and over and over. Yeah. But then it became a community, and we stayed there for 9 months, and we started going into people's huts. And they'd share everything. They wanted to share everything they had. The children began to love us. We began to love them. There were three people or siblings in particular that really became like our children. I mean, they have earthly fathers and stuff, but they knew that we would be there for them. And that was another good thing is that at one point with those three, I mean, you have to remember, at that time, the numbers were so large and nobody knew anything. There's no predictions. You couldn't predict from hour to hour, day to day. So a bunch of us with those three made a decision. We were going to let them, the government support them, or someone who loves them support them. And we chose to support them. Mm. It's like 20 people over three or four countries. Mm. Said, we'll take care of them. Mm. You know, and just because it's the right thing to do, you know, we love them like they're our children. Yeah. And that relationship's gone on for 4 years, and it has been interesting.
Yeah, so I remember when you did this, and I guess we haven't had in-depth conversation about it until now, and I thought that you had gone over there for that purpose, but you were just there checking things out, and this presented itself to you.
Here's how crazy it is, Rodney. We were scheduled to come home. Our visa was up. It takes weeks to get visas in Macedonia. Weeks, months. And on the way out, we went through Skopje. We're about to leave. I mean, we had another week or so, 2 weeks. We stopped by these friends of ours at this church. And they're native Macedonians. And we said, hey, man, we got to leave, but we've just been at the refugee camp, and we want to stay and participate. And one of the ladies there said, okay, give me your information. The day we were scheduled to leave, which was my birthday, February the 23rd, we got a new visa. It took her 6 days. 6 days to get us a new visa.
Karma.
So we spent the next year, the rest of that year there, and then really began to develop time with these. But these cats we stayed up with, and everything in that world, and I know you didn't want to talk about refugees, and here I am doing it. Well, I didn't say you didn't want to. It wasn't the purpose, I guess, when we showed up.
Actually, it was. Okay. Yeah.
So slow process, 6 months to do this, a year to do this. You know, so average a refugee spends 7 years in a camp before they get placement anywhere. And especially at that time, because Europe had just become oversaturated. I mean, you can only do so much. you know, and there's so many millions, and I get it. I really get it. So they settled in Skopje, which is northern Macedonia, which Macedonia is now called Northern Macedonia because of an agreement with Greece. So they're on their way to getting into the EU. Whether or not that's good, I don't know, but that's beside the point. Anyway, got them into NATO. Anyway, so they live there for a year, but there's no hope. I mean, Macedonia is the eighth poorest country in Europe. And there's just no, there's only 2 million people in the country. And they just don't have that much. It's very political. It's just very little hope. Like here, Bobby Arnold, oh, I can go to from Georgia to Austin. And, well, there's not that kind
of things
dream.
Will work out. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There's just not that kind of dream. It's really, I'd say unfair, but it's, so that's not a good place. Oh, by the way, and make yourself a refugee there. You know, you're just no way it's going to have any kind of chance. So.
So what about these children you adopted? You said there's a story there. What's the current story with them?
Well, from there, one of them we smuggled through. It's called human trafficking, but in the best sense of the word, yeah. You know, or being a good human. And gosh, it cost like $8,000, which we all collected, you know, per person. So one summer, he decided to get to Norway, and they have another brother there. They have four siblings. They lost everything. They're from Syria, and they absolutely lost everything. And so one brother made it to Norway, and he was waiting on them, the other three, to show up, and they got stuck in the camp, and that's when everything just kind of went nuts. They were the first train to show up that got stuck. So he just made that decision. And of course, all this is in code and FaceTime, where it's kind of encoded is the word I'm looking for. And eventually, actually, Dorothy smuggled him to Greece and got him into Greece. all the way through Greece, I think, where they met up with some real human traffickers, you know, some of the serious kind. Mm. And long story short, he made it all the way to Norway finally. It's a long story than that, and it took weeks. It's a much longer, but he made it to Norway. That left the other two siblings, one 19 and one 24, in Skopje, Macedonia. And the next summer, they decided to go because it's like we're all in. We're down to our last wads of money that we've been saving, we being a collective group of people over those three or four countries. And if we lose here, man, we'll have to start over and see if we can get any money to keep supporting you, because we'd keep them in apartments and food and things like that throughout the years that they were in Skopje. And so they took off and made their way to Norway. The girl made it in about 10 days. By the way, they've never flown. So you got to act, normal, and you got to act local, and you got to be cool going through an airport. Oh, and by the way, you're going to fly. You know, I mean, it's a lot for a 19-year-old and a 22-year-old girl to go through. Of course, then they've just traveled, God knows for how long. I guess they could do anything by then. So the girl made
they're probably so worn out by then that their brains don't even go there. Yeah.
Well, you know, they had some rest in that year or so they were in Skopje. But yes, emotionally, I mean, my God, they gave up their family. They gave up everything they've ever known.
Mm-hmm.
And so she made it to Norway. And of course, what you do is you get off the jet and then you turn yourself in to the authorities. The guy, at that time, Greece was changing to a more conservative political that day. And they started cracking down on immigrants. And he is a picture of an immigrant kid. And he couldn't get through the airport. Like 3 or 4 weeks, he just couldn't get through. So then it went radio silence. We heard he got through, and then we heard nothing. And every 2 weeks or so, a week and a half, I get on FaceTime a flag. And so, okay, I know he's in this country. I don't know where, but I know he's in that country. Mm-hmm. And then a little later, this next flag, you know. And eventually, he made it into Norway and turned himself in. And they all now live in Trondheim. And the government's giving them 3 years extension. They're teaching them. It's Norway is very expensive. anyway. So it's not a luxurious living, but it's a living and it's a chance. And they feel they have hope.
Yeah.
You know, they have they talk about their future a little now.
You know, Bobby, once again, I've learned something new being with you. And it's always something wonderful and deep. And then we can still go back and laugh and have, you know, a great time. But I think you really represent what we intended with this podcast, which is about the power of place. The places that change us.
Yeah, it's funny. They say, well, you didn't want to talk about refugees, but it's actually, that was...
And why it matters.
This podcast today exemplifies exactly what we're trying to do, you know.
And here you are back in Texas. And back when, anyway, you're raising a question on eyebrow. You are back in Texas. In case you didn't know that, Bobby. Yeah. You're here in Wimberley.
I am back in Texas, but I'm going to tell you what, Chick. And Rodney, you can't go through what I went through and come back the same person and see the world the same.
Right.
You just can't. So, yes, I'm here. I've been here almost 4 years. My goal is to be back in Macedonia next year for the rest of my life. You know, I just love it there.
Yeah.
And I'm very comfortable there.
Yeah, it comes through.
You know, an adventure and stuff like that. And, you know, I came back here. We needed to do a few things. We've done those things. Of course, I have a son here. And by the way, he gets all those good jobs, too. It's amazing.
So it runs in the family.
And Apple didn't fall far from the tree.
And by the way, I'll tell you another thing that's hereditary. Of course, you got Dorothy's brain and my ability to BS.
Your good looks.
No, you got that from Dorothy, too. Actually, he is Bobby 2.0 with enough meat from Dorothy to make him look like a rail. But okay, so okay, I'm 25, 30 minutes late to get here. And I was talking to his girlfriend the other day, Forrest's girlfriend, and he was going to Minnesota, booking them flights in Minnesota, and he booked them from leaving Minnesota to come to Denver. And Denver, which is where they were flying out from, and Denver to Minnesota. So that's hereditary, too. She said, my God, he's just like you. She said, I should book everything.
He's doing it on purpose.
No, he's just like me.
Well, I'll tell you what, Bobby, we want to extract a promise from you for next year. One of the things we love about the technology of the world and doing these podcasts is we have had conversations twice with people in Kenya and all around the world, and we want you to promise that should you be able to find the bandwidth and a good signal.
How's the internet over there?
Very fast and very cheap.
Yeah, well, you work on that because we want to have another conversation with you when you get back to your heart's home.
I'm going to have to go over there to take the equipment.
Oh, my gosh, yeah, Rodney, so. Yes, and take some photographs. Absolutely.
Oh, I can see it. Bobby, swimsuits by the sea. by the ocean.
Moving on. Well, Rodney, do you have any last thing to say before we wrap this up with our thank yous?
No, I guess I feel like we pretty much covered everything I wanted to talk about, but it's funny because, you know, Bobby's one of those guys that all the amazing things he's doing, he always makes you feel like you're the most important person in the room.
And
that's what I love about Bobby.
I hope Chick felt that.
I'm working on it.
Burr seal. Yeah.
I love hanging out with Bobby at Blue Rock and, you know, the jokes and the humor
You know, I had my photos made by Rodney.
I do know that.
That's pretty special.
You're one of the blessed ones. I have yet to have that privilege.
I couldn't believe it. I
know. Well, you shouldn't. I mean,
and I heard about this story, and I actually volunteered.
Oh, wow!
Well, thank you. And you got two of the bit. I mean, look, I have a great face for podcast.
On that note,
and you got two of the greatest photos of me. I mean, he captured me as me.
Yeah,
the grunge.
That's his genius.
The grunge and the. The goodness in
him. Yes, the grunge and the goodness.
How he did it, I'll never know.
Because he's Rodney Burseal. Yes.
Yes, I know.
And that's his gift. Mm-hmm. So once again, thank you, Bobby.
Sure, thank you.
This won't be our last conversation. And we want to thank our listeners for tuning in. We're sure you enjoyed this as much as we did. And if you did, leave some comments on our website, and you can find us on wherever podcasts are being broadcast these days. And we would be remiss if we did not thank our producer and engineer, Brocklyn Thomas. Thank you very much for all of your help.
You're the engineer.
Well, we have a new engineer in the studio now, so... And we also want to thank Rupert New Design for our awesome equipment here, which Bobby noticed the minute he came in and sat down as the musician that he is.
When that was being designed, Mr. Neve brought a paper of it to the studio.
Yes.
And put it in front of me and said, operate it.
Wow.
This is a paper drawing of it.
Wow.
He said, operate it. And me and a lot of engineers.
Well, and we want to thank our great website designer, Mr. Craig Burdett. And there's somebody I'm forgetting, Ron.
Our music.
Oh, yes, our intro and our outro music by the fantastic Donovan Frankenreiter. We want to thank him for that. And you'll hear that when you listen to this. So once again, remember that wonderful journeys of the heart, the mind, and spirit begin when you hear the words, Passports, Please.
See you.